other herbs work equally well. The smoke of a smudge bundle instantly creates an enormous shift in energy. It's also one of the best methods to use when you need to shift your entire energy field. To smudge your body with the intention of releasing cord attachments, place the burning herbs in a container filled with sand. The sand keeps the container from getting too hot. And then cup your hands into the smoke and wash the smoke over your body. Hold the intention that cords are being purified and cleansed. Using feathers with smoke. Another highly effective way to clear cords is to combine the movements of the feather with the use of smoke. These two elements together create an alchemy of air and fire that's a powerful way to cut cords and purify energy. The natural channeling powers of the feather, combined with the purifying and spiritual properties of the burning incense or herbs, can create a sense of deeply sacred space and healing. To activate this alchemy, hold a bowl with the burning herbs or the smoking herbs or incense or sage bundle in your non-dominant hand. An abalone shell can be used, but the deep bowl is a practical alternative that's a little easier to manage. Make sure that the bowl or shell is deep enough to prevent any sparks or burning leaves from flying out of it into the room. You will also want to make sure that the bowl contains enough sand, salt, or earth to insulate it from the heat of the burning herbs so that you don't burn your hand. Use the feather in your dominant hand to move the smoke over your body as you cut the cords. As mentioned before, use chopping and flicking motions followed by long sweeping ones to smooth out the energy after cutting the cords. Whenever you're using burning herbs, it's very important to take special precautions not to burn yourself or cause fires. Additionally, it's essential to take care that none of the burning embers land on carpets, furnishings, or clothing. Use an abalone shell or fireproof dish underneath the herbs to catch any stray sparks. And when you're through with your smudging ceremony, extinguish the herb bundle with water and leave it in a safe place, such as in the sink for a number of hours, to make sure it's truly out. Never leave a burning bundle of herbs unattended, and use water to completely extinguish them when you're finished. Many people have made the mistake of assuming a smudge bundle was out, only to come back and find it smoldering once again. Clearing Method 8. Salt. Salt is a powerful addition to any cord release methods, and it's highly effective. It's been used throughout history and around the world because it has been universally recognized as a great purifier. Both sea salt and rock salt are excellent to use for clearing. Although their overall effects are the same, there are subtle differences between the two. Sea salt brings the energy of water and ocean with it, so it's very effective for spaces dedicated to emotional healing. Rock salt comes from the earth and is more grounded in nature. It contributes to feeling of balance and integrity. To use salt for releasing cords, first scrub your body in the shower or bathe with salt with the intention that the salt is scrubbing away and releasing what is not needed. Remember to end with a cold rinse. You can also take a salt bath before a cord-cutting ceremony. Before utilizing any of the other methods of cord-cutting, for instance, the scissor or knife method or the golden light, obtain a new container of table salt. Sprinkle a bit around the periphery of the room or space where you're going to do the cord release. Pay particular attention to the corners, which is where stagnant energy tends to accumulate. Then, create a circle of salt to stand in while doing the cord ceremony. Immediately after the cord cutting, vacuum up and dispose of the salt. It's okay to pour it down the drain. If you're outdoors, instead of using table salt, use Epsom salt. Regular table salt is not good for plants, but Epsom salt is a different mineral, magnesium sulfate, and it will not harm plants. It also has amazing clearing properties. After the salt clearing, take a cold shower. The frigid water will help wash any leftover heavy, dark energies out of your energy field. Make sure that the water goes over the top of your head as well. It takes only a few minutes to clear out unwanted energies. If you can't shower, wash your hands in cold water up to the elbow and then shake the water off vigorously over the top of your head before you dry your hands. Another method to use after your clearing is to add a couple cups of Epsom salts or a combination of equal parts table salt and baking soda to your bath and then soak for at least 20 minutes. You might want to add some essential oils such as pine or fir or evergreens that are cleansing and purifying. Although citrus and eucalyptus oils are also cleansing, for some people they can be an irritant in bath water, so it's wise not to use them. When you step out of the bath, your energy field will be clearer. Additionally, the magnesium and Epsom salts can be absorbed into your body, so it helps you relax. Clearing Method 9, Waterfall Sweep. This is a highly effective yet simple technique. This one is especially potent if you don't have the time to do an intensive cord clearing. You can do this in a parking lot or in a public restroom stall. For example, if you're shopping in a crowded mall and suddenly you feel your energy zapped, duck into the nearest restroom to do this clearing method. Begin with a quick scan to see the cords that are flowing out of you. Notice or be aware of them without judgment. Then take your hands and sweep them over the front of your body and your body sides with rapid, strong movements. Use the sound shoo. That's S-H-U. Shoo. Use the sound shoo out loud and forcibly again and again with every swipe. As you do this, visualize the cords releasing and imagine that you are standing under a refreshing, bracing waterfall and everything that is releasing is flowing away. You don't have to be tucked away somewhere private to do this. I've done this in the lobby of a theater. People looked at me a little strangely, but I didn't care because I felt so much better afterward. Clearing Method 10. Breath of fire. One formidable method for clearing utilizes your breath. To use this potent technique, take a few very deep full breaths to center yourself. Imagine that you are breathing in prana. Now prana is life force energy with every inhalation and releasing all that is not needed with every exhalation. Then increase the rhythm of your breathing until it's very rapid. Once you can sense that you've released stagnant cords, you can use long outflowing breaths to smooth and refine the energy. Your hands can follow the movement of air created by your breathing to enhance the effectiveness of this technique. Here is this method step by step. 1. Stand with your legs at least a foot apart. Gently sway back and forth and side to side until you find the place where you feel centered. 2. Relax your body and bend slightly at the knee. In other words, unlock your knees. Let your arms hang loosely at your side. 3. Start with a few very deep, very full breaths and exhale loudly. Now, you want to blow your nose before you do this. 4. Hold the intention of what or whom you desire to release. Breathe in life force energy, and as you exhale, release all that is not needed. Slowly increase the rhythm of your breathing until it's very rapid. If you get dizzy, slow down for a bit until you feel balanced, and then gear it up again. This method is not recommended for someone with high blood pressure or someone with glaucoma. You should notice some strands just dropping off your body when you do this breath of fire method. 6. To complete the process, slow your breath down and take very deep, very full breaths. You should feel lighter and brighter. And when you look at your remaining strands, they should all be plump and bright and radiant. Clearing method 11. Sacred bells, singing bowls, and gongs. One of my very favorite methods of clearing cords is to use sound from such objects as bells, singing bowls, and gongs. Bells have the ability to shatter accumulated stagnant energy strands by producing a sound that permeates the molecules of a space and even penetrates the space between the molecules. The tone increases the flow of energy and restores vibrational balance. Concentric circles of sound continue to resonate long after we perceive that the tone has faded into silence. In almost a mystical way, the sound knows which of your strands need to be cooled. Historically, bells have been associated with mysticism. Ancient metalsmiths believed that a kind of alchemy could be achieved during the bell-making process. In some cultures, bells were made of different metals. Each one was thought to carry the energy of a different planet. This was an idea originally postulated by Aristotle. When such a bell was rung, it was believed to generate universal forces capable of aligning the dwelling space with the cosmos. Iron was associated with Mars, both because of its rusty red color and its importance in ancient warfare. Lead, heavy and sluggish, was linked to Saturn. The metal mercury was associated with the planet Mercury because of its quick movements. Silver represented the moon, while the sun was gold. Emperors, such as the Holy Roman Emperor Rudolf II, commissioned bells made of those metals and others, believing that they could inspire tremendous energy. In some traditions, the ringing of metal bells was thought to drive away harmful spirits and negative energy. Hebrew rabbis rang bells before entering the most sacred areas of a temple to keep negativity at bay. In medieval Europe, church bells rang out not only to call people to worship, but to also dispel dark forces. At the same time that sacred bells were being crafted and used in Europe, they were also being used in temples, monasteries, and ceremonies of Japan, China, Tibet, Indonesia, India, and the Middle East. In Buddhist cultures, the sound of the bell was an offering to the Buddha. Egyptian drawings on tomb walls showed priests ringing bells to bestow blessings and dispel dark energies. To release cords using a bell, 1. First hold the bell to your heart. Fill it with love. Imagine the love spiraling around the inside of the bowl of the bell. 2. Hold the bell out a few inches from your body, parallel to your solar plexus chakra. 3. Ring the bell. If the striker, also called a clapper, begins to spin, this often indicates unbalanced energy. However, don't be concerned. Just keep ringing until it rings clear. 4. Finally, hold the bell parallel to your pubic bone, near your first chakra, and slowly lift the bell up and over your head. As you do this, as you ring the bell, hold the intention that unneeded strands are dissolving. Balinese bells. There are many different types of bells. One very special bell is the Balinese bell. They are used for clearing because of their superior tone. Perhaps part of the power of these remarkable bells comes from the fact that the creation is synchronized with the phases of the moon, with prayers and blessings to the gods that are offered at each step of the process. Making a Balinese bell can take 2 months or longer, but on the auspicious day when it's finally done, a beautiful consecration ceremony calls life into the newborn bell. Tibetan bells. Tibetan bells, called ganta, are excellent tools for clearing cords and strands. Although they were originally made in Tibet after the takeover of Tibet by the Chinese, Tibetan refugees have created this highly symbolic bell in northern India and in Nepal. Every part of a Tibetan bell is richly laden with meaning. The bell should come with a small metal object called a dorji, which represents the male principle, power, and salvation. The bell itself represents the female principle, wisdom, and the great void. Using the ganta and the dorji together is thought to restore balance, because they represent yin and yang, the two opposing yet harmonious forces in the universe. Their combination creates an inner mystical unity, a balance of the two primordial creative forces of life. Sometimes frightening faces are imprinted on the surface of Tibetan bells. These images of gods and goddesses are intended to dispel forces of evil and darkness. On the top of the bell is often a mandala of 8 lotus leaves symbolizing the voices of the gods. Along the edge of the bell are images of 51 dorjis, representing 51 challenges that can be resolved by ringing of the bell. Traditionally, a lama would ring the bell while doing mudras, ritualistic gestures with the dorji, which represent the dance of the gods. Tibetan bells can also be played in the same method as a singing bowl by circling a wooden mallet around the circumference of the bell. In this chapter, you've learned some methods to unhook or release energy strands that are diminishing you. In the next chapter, you'll learn some protection techniques, so you are less likely to pick up strands that are not empowering. Chapter 4. Protecting and shielding your energy field. Imagine that you're in a sturdy cabin in the woods late at night. A tremendous storm outside is thrashing the trees, and thundering rain is pouring down on the roof. You're curled up in a large, comfortable chair in front of the fire, absorbed in a good book, sipping a fine port, and listening to Baroque music while the storm wails outside. You are supremely safe and content in your retreat. This is what it's like to have a strong protective energy around you. No matter what is occurring outside, you are sheltered, relaxed, and protected. Energy protection is a very strong energy field around you that allows what is yours to be yours and what is theirs to be theirs. Shielding techniques have been used over thousands of years in cultures around the world. In every native and ancient culture, the mystics, elders, priests, shamans, medicine men, and medicine women have maintained the importance of protecting one's energy. There's a very real reason for doing this that continues to be relevant in today's world. In many ways, our energy fields can be likened to a crystal clear swimming pool. If there isn't a fence around the pool, and all the neighbors and their friends swim in the pool, track mud into it, and even urinate in it, it will get murky. This is similar to our energy fields. If we do not have personal boundaries, our energy can get exceedingly dismal and dull. We take protective measures in every area of our life. For example, to protect our physical bodies, we have seat belts, smoke detectors, electrical plate covers, and guardrails. So it makes sense to protect and guard our life force energy as well. In this chapter, you'll learn when you might need energy protection and what deeper energies are at play, as well as some excellent psychic defense methods. We'll start by exploring whether protection is or isn't always a good idea, and why. Is protection always a good idea? Of course, it's a good idea to guard your energy and keep it strong and clear. However, before you jump into activating the protective shield around yourself, there's some things to contemplate, as well as some very good reasons to not protect yourself. Here's why. Protection affirms the illusion that we're separate from each other. The challenge with energy protection is that from a spiritual perspective, there's nothing out there that is not you, as I've mentioned before. So ultimately, there's nothing from which to protect yourself. We are each connected to and a part of a living, pulsing universe, one that sings with life and reverberates with the intensity of spirit. There are no bad and good parts of creation. Everything is relative to everything else. Nothing exists in isolation. You have an intimate connection with the firmament. And when you are connected to your source, there is never anything to fear, and there's no need to shield yourself. So from a spiritual perspective, shielding can create a barrier between you and the world. It affirms the illusion that we are separate from each other. Two, protection can diminish compassion. Whenever you shield yourself from someone, you are declaring that you want a wall between you. For example, it's not uncommon for people to protect themselves when they're with someone who's dying. Of course, the physical energy of the person who is dying is low. Their body's life force is draining away. And some people are worried that their energy will be drained as well. But far better than putting a shield around yourself is to connect to the soul of that person. When you connect with someone's soul, not their physical body and not their emotional body, there is only love. And love never needs a shield. Love never needs a shield. This is true in any encounter. To understand this, imagine that you were in a hospital dying. Would you want those around you to be protecting themselves from you? Chances are this wouldn't feel very good to you. What would feel great would be if each person saw your light and your soul and truly saw you and not your dying body. There are times when it's important to set aside your fear and the feeling of the need to protect yourself and to step into your strength, courage, and grace. Imagine that you notice your energy drop after an encounter. Before you activate your protective armor, take a moment to tune into the essence of the other person. In other words, find the place within that person where their spirit and their love dwell. Find the place where you are not separate from each other. This is holy. When you touch that place, there's no reason to protect yourself. Many decades ago, when I looked into the eyes of the unknown gunman who had just hit me with his car and then shot me and was just about to shoot me again, the crazy thing was that instead of feeling afraid, I saw his soul and felt a depth of compassion for him. I connected with the place in him in which we were not separate from each other. That was a sacred moment. I'm still amazed and in awe that this happened. And although it felt like he really wanted to shoot me again, he couldn't do it. His arm trembled as he pointed the gun at me. It was as if an internal struggle was going on. Then he turned, got in his car, and drove off. It seemed that simply dissolving the barriers between us and touching his soul changed everything. I didn't protect myself at that time, when to not protect myself energetically seemed incredibly foolhardy, and yet it probably saved my life. Three, protection can reinforce being a victim of life. Continually protecting yourself reinforces the idea of being a victim. It solidifies a belief that others can hurt or deplete you. someone who constantly protects their energy is saying to themselves, I am the kind of person who needs protecting. There are a lot of things out there that can harm me. The trouble with this is that subconsciously you are affirming that there are people and situations that you need to constantly protect yourself from. And this can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, the more you protect yourself, the more things you will attract that you need to protect yourself from. This contributes to feeling that you are at the mercy of life's fortunes and not in charge of your own destiny. So there are some good reasons to not shield yourself, and protecting your energy field is not something to do in a frivolous manner. On a personal note, I very rarely shield myself. However, there are times when it's a very good idea to protect your energy field. For example, I protect myself when I forget who I am, and this usually occurs when I feel fear. If I'm walking at night alone in a part of town I don't know and I feel afraid, I immediately cast a defensive energy armor over my body. Or if I'm talking to someone who is overbearing and I can feel my energy beginning to plummet, I immediately cast a protective shield over myself. I don't hesitate. And you shouldn't either. If you ever feel the need to place a shell of defense around yourself, do it. Please don't judge yourself when you decide to shield yourself. Know that there are times when we feel spiritually expansive, and there's times when we feel very human. It's important to honor both of these perceptions of self. If you're feeling human and vulnerable and feel that you need to shield yourself, then do it without hesitation. If your energy is up, everything is usually fine when you're around others. But if you have a day when your energy is lagging, you can be impacted by the energies around you, and you can feel depleted. Most likely, you've picked up or absorbed energy from other people. This doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad people. It just means they're not a good match for your energy. The great thing is that the opposite can occur. When you're with people who are a frequency match with you, your energy can be uplifted and can sparkle. I suggest that whenever you feel the desire to protect your energy field, tune in and ask, is it for my highest good? And then proceed accordingly. Is this mine or someone else's? Whenever we're with other people, our energy field is affected. Sometimes our energy goes up, sometimes it goes down, and sometimes it's neutral. However, it's difficult to tell what energy is yours and what is someone else's. If you were feeling great and then, after you go near someone, your energy drops, this can be a clue that you've picked up on their underlying feelings. If you move away from them and your energy increases, this is a kind of validation that you'd been influenced by their energy. Please remember, I know I keep saying this, this doesn't mean they're bad. They just are not a frequency match with you at that time. Someone else might be around that same person and have their energy skyrocket into joy. I was a professional shiatsu practitioner in my younger years. Sometimes I would feel great before a session. But then, when I would put my hands on a client, I would notice a complete shift in my emotional state. I might go from feeling joyous to feeling anxious, depressed, or angry in an instant. When I first started doing body work, I thought everything I was feeling was mine, and I would find reasons in my life that could account for those emotions. Saul came to my shiatsu studio for a session one balmy spring morning. When he arrived, I was bubbling with joy about the daffodils that had just bloomed outside the window. But when I placed my hands on Saul's back, suddenly I plummeted into a dark depression. It felt like I'd been in the bright room and then someone switched the lights off. I scanned my life to see what had caused this instant depression. I thought things were going well in my relationship with my husband, but maybe there were issues I wasn't aware of. I thought about issues from my childhood and wondered if the depression was related to those. However, when I lifted my hands off of Saul, the emotion dissolved. When I talked to Saul after his session, he told me that he had just lost his job and he was extremely depressed and upset about it. Eventually, I began to understand that those sudden shifts of emotions I felt were my client's emotions, not mine. To confirm this, I would ask the client how they were feeling, and almost always they would affirm the emotions that I was experiencing when I had my hands on them. Feeling the emotions and thoughts of others is not uncommon. If you notice your energy drop around a particular person or in a particular location, chances are it's not your energy you're feeling. You've absorbed some of their energy. Have you ever walked into a crowded shopping mall and felt exhausted afterward? Worked all day with some challenging coworkers and felt drained by the end of the day? Listened to someone's problems and felt depleted afterward? Stood next to a stranger, perhaps in line at the store, and felt irritable afterward? Had sudden stabbing pains in your stomach, seemingly out of nowhere? Visited a hospital, nursing home, or jail, and felt de-energized afterwards? Sat close to someone in a waiting room, at a gathering, or at a restaurant, and felt unaccounted for emotions afterward? It's even possible to absorb the emotions of the person who prepared the food you ate in a restaurant. Have you ever felt as if a heavy blanket was thrown over you? Or noticed that after having a few drinks at a party, different people seem to wobble your energy field? Have you ever felt suffocated by a friend, acquaintance, or family member when they were talking to you? These symptoms can often be a sign that you're absorbing or picking up energy from others in a way that is not beneficial for you. Sometimes there's influences that you can't see, but that can still affect your energy. Some locations have residual energy from past events that you could absorb. Have you ever walked into a room after an argument and the room felt thick? This is residual energy. And some locations have predecessor energy from the people who lived there or died there, as in an earthbound spirit. And this can lower your energy. There are a myriad of visible and invisible forces that can unbalance your energy. Protection can be a good idea when energy that you absorb is not beneficial. Protection is also warranted at times when someone consciously or even subconsciously directs negative energy towards you. This is called a psychic attack. Psychic attacks. Reports of psychic attacks have been chronicled throughout history in cultures around the world. These attacks can be powerful and can throw you into a tailspin, but they can also be subtle. In some cases, the attack can have been going on for so long that you aren't even aware of it. It's a bit like the force of gravity, which is constantly exerting pressure on you, but it's always been there, so it seems normal. Sometimes, you're aware of a psychic attack only when it stops. For example, if the individual dies, or if you do a release ceremony, you might feel a shift. The constant drone of a continual psychic attack, for example, from a disgruntled family member, can be such a part of the fabric of your life that you're not aware of it. Once it releases, though, you'll feel light and buoyant. Sometimes psychic attacks are deliberate and conscious, but most of the time they are subconscious. Subconscious psychic attacks. In a subconscious psychic attack, someone may subconsciously mount an attack by focusing negative thoughts at you without doing it on purpose. Here's how most subconscious psychic attacks occur. Someone gets angry with you. They're thinking of you while they're mad, and you get a headache. They weren't conscious that they were doing this. It was just a byproduct of their angst. But they can only affect you if there are energy strands connecting you to each other. Almost always, subconscious psychic attacks come from someone you know. someone with whom there are already cord attachments. There are times they can come from someone you don't know, but this is rare. A subconscious psychic attack aimed towards you might manifest in a number of ways. You might wake up with a stomach ache, or you might suddenly feel upset for no reason. These symptoms, of course, can be natural occurrences. But it can also be that you are the subject of a psychic attack. You might even unintentionally send an attack to someone else. In my youth, I had a boss who I considered to be very unreasonable. One day he accused me of something I didn't do. I was upset, but I didn't feel like I could tell him how distressed I was, so I didn't say anything about the incident. I just held my emotions down all day. However, when I went home that night, I exploded, seething. I said, "Damn him! Damn him! I just wish I could roll him over with a steamroller." I even imagined his body looking like a cartoon, where he was as thin as a sheet of paper after he'd been rolled over. It was a random thought. Of course I didn't want him to be harmed, but in that moment it made me feel better to see him as a kind of cartoonish flat man after being rolled over again and again by the steamroller. Often when someone's emotions are suppressed, their thought forms can be more potent. And I must have been very potent and had very strong thoughts because of what happened in the aftermath. The next day I went to work. My boss looked terrible. I said, "What's wrong, Neil?" He replied, "I don't know what happened, but when I woke up this morning, I felt like I'd been run over by a steamroller." He actually said that. "I felt like I'd been run over by a steamroller." I was shocked and felt terrible. I didn't mean to harm him, but evidently I had subconsciously and unconsciously sent him harmful energy, which is a kind of psychic attack. It was a misuse of energy. Even if I didn't consciously know what I was doing, it was a misuse of energy. I vowed to never do something like that again ever. And I haven't. Even if I'm angry with someone or about a situation. There have been a few times that I've been tempted, especially if someone I care about has been mistreated. I'm a bit like a mother bear in that regards. But so far I've held off because I know how powerful these psychic attacks can be. The more personal power and inner strength you possess, the less likely you are to ever want to direct your anger towards another. People who send subconscious negative thought forms usually are people who feel disempowered or like victims in life. They lack personal power. The more likely you are to speak up for yourself, the less likely you are to send a subconscious negative thought form to someone. If I'd told Neil that I was angry about the situation and calmly given him the reasons why, I wouldn't have had pent-up emotions that exploded into kind of a psychic arrowhead that penetrated him. If you are smugly thinking that you've never sent a subconscious psychic attack to anyone, ask yourself if you ever got mad at and sent an ill wish to an individual who drove dangerously in traffic, or squeezed in front of you to take your parking place, or elbowed their way in front of you in line, or was rude to you on the phone. If you answered yes, chances are there have been times when you subconsciously sent a negative energy. Now, don't feel guilty about it. We've all done it. It's important to forgive yourself. However, if you catch yourself doing it, stop immediately. These kind of attacks always boomerang back to you, sooner or later, one way or another. Later in the chapter, you'll learn ways to repel psychic attacks and negative energies that boomerang back to you. Deliberate psychic attacks. Most psychic attacks are subconscious. However, in rare cases, there are some people who consciously send negative energy out. It can feel hard to feel centered if this happens to you. In the past, these negative thought forms were called curses, spells, pointing the bone, or black magic, among other things. These kind of attacks occur when someone is experiencing intense emotions and directs those feelings to one person with a focused, laser-like ferocity. They are real. But there are ways to fend off these attacks. If you are the object of a directed and intentional psychic onslaught, but your energy is strong, nothing, and I mean nothing, can penetrate you. You won't even know you're being attacked when it's happening. You will be on a different frequency. It's like you are tuned into the classical station on the radio, and even though on another station there's a shock jock ranting about the world, you'll never hear it. However, in times when you're tired, have ill health, are drinking a lot of alcohol, or taking recreational drugs, or going through emotional upheaval, your energy field might be thinner, and a psychic attack can be devastating. Once, when I was in Australia, I was informed by an Aborigine friend that some of her clan members were pointing the bone at an author who claimed that her best-selling book on Aborigines was a true story, when it wasn't. I wasn't in a position to do anything about it, so I just prayed for all concerned. Shortly after the bone was pointed at her, the author's son was in a serious automobile accident. He eventually was okay. The author didn't know that the bone was pointed at her. Nevertheless, it seemed to have dramatically impacted her life. Her book, which originally was listed as nonfiction, was later relisted as a novel, which in fact it was. The term pointing the bone means that an Aborigine takes a bone and points it in the direction of someone they wish to harm. It's a kind of psychic attack. It is such a serious attack that in the past, it was not uncommon for Aborigines who were the victims of this kind of psychic attack to simply drop dead, with no perceivable physical cause. It's only happened a couple times in my life, but I've been the victim of conscious psychic attacks. These kind of experiences can come at you out of left field, and they can be very challenging. Often you don't know what hit you. Once a woman who had attended my seminars told me she had a revelation that we were meant to teach together. She said it would help her career. I didn't know her except that she'd attended several of my events. I politely said that I taught alone and I wasn't really set up to co-teach. She insisted that it was our karma to teach together. She said that she saw herself teaching groups of thousands of people around the world, and I was the one who was going to help her get there. I never wanted to miss anyone's dreams, but I knew that I wasn't the one to do this for her, so I gently declined. It seemed that she understood, and then I put it out of my mind. A week later, seemingly out of the blue, I started to have moments when I felt I couldn't breathe. At other times, I felt there was an intense constriction in my chest. It happened again and again. Each time it came on suddenly. My health was fine, so I didn't know what was happening. Finally, I went into a deep meditation. I saw dense, thick, dark strands that had wrapped around my chest, and they were squeezing my ribs. No wonder I felt like I couldn't breathe. Then suddenly, the woman's face emerged. She looked totally enraged. As soon as I saw her face, I realized I was under psychic attack. I was surprised it was her. I'd almost forgotten our chat. I immediately began to remove the strands. They were incredibly dense and sticky, almost like tar. Every time I tried to pull one off, it would reattach. I had to raise my frequency and vibration high enough that they wouldn't stick. Eventually, I detached them, but over the next few months, when I was tired or my energy was down, another wave of attacks would occur. I was curious if these were conscious attacks or subconscious, so I did a little bit of stealth work. When I found out that she'd trained in black magic, I realized that the attacks were probably conscious. I understood why she attacked me. It was upsetting for her when I didn't agree with her, especially when she felt it had been a revelation that I was the one to make her famous. I didn't like being attacked, but I understood the deeper motivation. Additionally, I realized that she had some borderline mental illness challenges. On the road to compassion, it's valuable to comprehend why people act the way they do. This makes it easier for you to forgive and let go. I also had compassion for her because of the law of karma, which declares that whenever a person consciously sends out energy to harm another, it will multiply in intensity and come back around. I knew that what she was sending me would eventually harm her. It is the way of energy. Always. The person who sends out a psychic attack is diminished, sometimes beyond measure. It may not be immediate, but it does happen. As much as it might feel good to get revenge or cause someone to feel the hurt they caused you, it will harm you. Do not do it. The higher up the spiritual rung you are, the faster it will come back to you. It's what I call IK, instant karma. I want to mention this just in case you're thinking, boy, would I like to wobble my ex-boss or my ex-husband. You know, maybe I'll send him just a teeny-weeny psychic attack. Trust me, it will boomerang back to you. Don't do it. There were times that it felt so unfair that the woman was attacking me. I hadn't done anything wrong, but I reminded myself that there was a deeper truth. And when I turned everything around, I realized that I had a pattern of being treated unfairly, and I reached back into my childhood. I knew the attacks were an opportunity to deal with that pattern, so I didn't retaliate. I worked on myself to release that old pattern. I did also erect some pretty stiff shields of protection, though. And I kept pulling off the sticky strands when they managed to make it through the shield. Eventually, the attack stopped, and I never heard of her again. Symptoms of a psychic attack. All the symptoms that I'm going to mention have perfectly logical reasons and might have nothing to do with an attack. However, if you have a number of these and there are not physical reasons for them, you might want to explore your strands and see if it's an attack. Sudden pain. It might reoccur in the same location or at the same time of day. Or the pain might come on very quickly and leave as quickly. Fatigue and lethargy. You feel drained, exhausted, seemingly for no reason. Headaches. You experience a sudden onset of headaches, sometimes even severe ones. Feeling physically cold. You have uncharacteristic chills or the feeling that you just can't get warm. Nightmares. Unusual, frightening dreams occur in your night hours. It's not uncommon for images of the attacker to appear in your dreams or come in a symbolic form. For example, Donald, one of my students, kept seeing a frightening deer with long, sharp teeth in his dreams. He also saw a deer being born that had evil-looking eyes. Donald finally realized it was a jealous co-worker with the last name Dearborn. Dearborn was bringing his energy down. Donald was lucky it was such an obvious dream. Often dreams are more difficult to untangle. Feeling like you're being watched. There can be a feeling that there is someone beside you or someone that you can just see out of the corner of your eye, but when you look, there's no one there. Fuzzy thinking. It can feel like there's sawdust in your brain. It's hard to find the words you want, and it's difficult to concentrate. Restricted breathing. Every time you take a breath, it feels constricted or difficult. It can feel like there's pressure on your chest, like someone is sitting on you. Heavy, depressed feeling. You have uncharacteristic negative feelings about yourself. It can feel like there's pressure in your chest making it hard to breathe or just making you feel so depressed. Strong and sudden emotions. You feel upset without having a reason. Or you overly react to a situation that normally wouldn't bother you. It can feel like there's an urgency to your emotions. This is just a short list, And of course, there can be many reasons for these experiences. But if you have these symptoms and you feel that you're under attack, you just might be. Why would someone attack you? It can be daunting to believe that someone is thinking harmful thoughts about you. The first time I experienced it, I was a bit in shock. I knew I was a kind, thoughtful person, and I didn't wish anyone harm. I couldn't understand why anyone would want to harm me. Okay, I was naive, very naive. Life isn't always fair. Sometimes bad things do happen to good people. However, as I keep saying, beneath the surface, we learn and grow from every experience, even the less than pleasant ones. Here are some of the reasons that someone might attack you. Jealousy. Most of the time, an attack comes from someone who's jealous of you. Maybe you've advanced at work and they haven't. Maybe you married the person they desired. Maybe your sibling feels that a parent likes you more. Or maybe their life feels stagnant while your life is sailing forward with joy. The list goes on and on. Jealousy is the most common reason for an attack. It's valuable to remember that bad behavior comes from fear or ignorance. And if someone is jealous of you, chances are at their core they're afraid of not being enough. It can help you develop compassion when you know that the person who is jealous of you is simply afraid and insecure. Disagreements. Attacks can also come from someone who is upset that you don't agree with them about something. Politics or religion, for example. Mental illness. Someone who is mentally ill can't see the world around them clearly and can take offense at illusionary things. Their subconscious psychic attacks can be swift and vicious. I was in the unfortunate situation of having a mother who was diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic. She was in and out of mental hospitals for many years during my childhood. She was violent at times, and some of the mental health authorities were worried about my safety. The strands between us were so durable that even if I was 500 miles away, I could feel when she was having an episode, especially when she was focused on me. The energy was so intense that sometimes I felt like I was getting slugged over the head with a baseball bat. Her paranoia often caused her to believe that I was the enemy. At one point, she thought I caused the Watergate episode with President Nixon. Another time, she thought the FBI was watching me, and she walked up and down the sidewalk in front of our house with a sign that said, "I know we're being watched." Drug addiction. Someone who has a serious drug addiction not only has holes and tears in their auric field so that astral entities can slip through to attach to them, but also, because they aren't seeing the world clearly, they can take offense where no offense was intended, and they can send a searing psychic attack to someone who they feel wronged them. Possession. Although it's very, very rare, there are times when someone is possessed. However, 99.99% of the time, what we think of as possession simply isn't. You will probably never come across someone who's possessed in your lifetime. More often than not, a person is imbalanced or mentally ill, but we assume they're possessed because of what we see in the movies and television shows. I've included possession under psychic attack because sometimes being possessed can feel similar, but it's different than an attack. Possession is when an entity or even an earthbound spirit co-occupies a body for a while. It can only happen if the body has openings in the auric field. These openings usually come from taking too many drugs or too much alcohol for extended periods, although sometimes it can occur if someone's exhausted or if they're giving away too much of their personal power to others. Did I draw this to me? Some people ask, do Did I attract this attack to me? From a spiritual perspective, we draw all life experiences to us to learn and to grow. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you, nor does it mean you're a negative person. It's just one of life's experiences. Please do not judge yourself if you become the victim of a psychic attack. You don't know the whole story. Just look at it as a learning experience. Here's an example of not knowing the whole story. 6 months after Barbara had taken one of my seminars, she made the decision to divorce her husband. She'd been thinking about it for 3 years. Her husband was an abusive alcoholic, and she realized she'd been enabling him. She knew it was time to change her life. When she told her husband that she wanted a divorce, he decided it must be because of all the New Age stuff she was doing. As my course was the latest one that she'd done, he decided it must be my fault. And he flew into a rage that was directed at both Barbara and me. Barbara was terrified of him and went into hiding. The folks at the domestic violence shelter in her town were worried about her safety and suggested that she leave the state while her husband cooled down. With his wife in hiding, the husband focused his fury against me. He would wait in his car outside our residence and then follow my car in an intimidating way. He wrote threatening letters and hacked into my computer. At the same time as these things were occurring, I could feel the onslaught of his anger. It was a strong psychic attack. Eventually, my husband and I got a restraining order. We were given the strongest, longest one available in the state of California. I knew I hadn't done anything to this man. I never counseled his wife to get a divorce. I would never do that. It wasn't my place. But instead of wondering what I'd done to draw this experience into my life and beating myself up, I told myself I didn't know the whole story. I reminded myself that even if I didn't understand why I'd gotten tangled up in someone else's dilemma, I reminded myself it was a part of the Creator's plan. And it really was. After the 3-year restraining order had expired, the husband wrote to me to profusely apologize and also to thank me. He said the whole experience was the best thing that had ever happened to him. It completely turned his life around. He had been one of California's premier executives in a global industry. But as a result of what occurred, he lost his job, his prestige, his wife, his friends. Subsequently, he said he did a lot of soul searching. He eventually went to massage school and became a healer. He realized he'd become a successful businessman to fulfill his parents' expectations, but he didn't like being an executive. However, after he lost everything, he found his heart's calling in being a healer. He said it never would have happened if he hadn't gotten the restraining order from me. That was the wake-up call he needed. Of course, I had my own journey, and I grew through it all as well. In the past, I'd been afraid to stand up for myself. So one of the things I gained was being willing to take a stand when I went to court to get the restraining order. I share this experience with you as a reminder that often we don't know the whole story, even when we feel that we're being psychically attacked. Although there is usually a deeper purpose at play, there's still immense value in learning how to shield and protect your energy in the event that you find yourself the recipient of unwanted energies. Consider your own part in the psychic attack. We each bear some responsibility if we are psychically attacked. From a higher perspective, it's something we put into motion or something that we've opened up ourselves to. At times, we have attracted it into our lives as a way of growing spiritually. Sometimes just admitting that you bear some responsibility can de-escalate the situation. It's like when there's an argument and then one person apologizes. It often diffuses everything. Even though on some deep level, you've attracted the situation into your life, as I mentioned previously, There is never any reason to feel guilty about it. You're growing spiritually. Sometimes the lesson that you're learning is just